A return of another golden oldie. How far can a dog run into the woods?
Halfway.
And then he's running out again. How far can we run into oil?
Halfway.
And then we're running out. You're listening to a special edition of the Home Power Hour.
Isn't every show special, Jack? All right. We're going to try to bring some hope here to our terminal culture. And
we're going to look how terminal the culture really is.
Well, that's right. You've got to understand where you're at before you can begin to get better. You've got to understand that we've hit the bottom of the barrel. Begin that upward swing towards sustainability in the ecozoic era, where humans understand and support the life-giving functions of the planet.
Right. We have right on our desk a PSA that I think is very appropriate for today. Suicide prevention PSA. This year, 1 million Americans will make a suicide attempt, and more than 30,000 people will die by suicide. Support the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention by participating in the Chapel Hill Out of the Darkness 5K Community Walk on November 4th. Raise money for local and national suicide prevention and awareness programs. To learn more and register, log on to www.outofthedarkness.org. And the unfortunate thing is it has a kill date on the announcement.
Huh.
But we're here to try to prevent you from even contemplating such nasty
things. Right.
We're
ready to
walk.
And
we're to bring you out of the darkness.
Out of the darkness of the oil age. And stop all the craziness. 10,000 people a year die in rollovers of SUVs out on the highways.
Make sure you get those tires properly inflated.
That's right. And don't play with any matches. Since we are in the fossil fuel age, things could go boom. Well, we've had some good wind around here recently. I've been pouring the footings for another wind turbine up there at the TS Design and trying to capture some of that energy that's just blowing in the wind, blowing in the breeze. And it's been a lot of sun. You folks with solar electric modules, you've had no problem. They've been putting out as much as they can, although you might have had to dust them off because we haven't had rain in so long.
That's true, but that's going to change.
Oh, yeah.
Because we've got liquid sunshine on the way for hydropower.
That's what they tell us.
We got this and news and, of course, Sustainable Jack and
Solar Jim
here on the Home Power Hour. Man, what a wonderful start.
I love that orchestra.
Yes, and it's so funny how we can pack them all in here.
Give them a raise.
That's right. Well, they're union, you know, so we have knowledge that they're going to be ready for that.
Well, it's time now for headlines from around the world. Headlines about renewable energy, that is, brought to you by our own Surfing Sustainable Jack.
Watching grass grow is critical in the hunt for new biofuels. Yes, it's not normally one of the most exciting activities, and it's very fruitless when you're in the middle of a drought. However, New York Energy's needs, the rural economic development, and reducing the human contribution to global climate change depend on finding new sources of fuel to make into ethanol. New York State is working on that.
Switchgrass, I guess.
After 2 years of cutting through regulatory red tape, all the agreements are in place to allow construction of the Noble Thumb Wind Park in Ubley, Michigan.
Oh.
The Huron County Board of Commissioners and the Huron County Planning Commission have signed agreements with the provider to put up wind turbines. Are you listening out there, other states?
Nobody's opposed to that thumb.
Starting this month, China's State Electricity Regulatory Commission, CERC, will assume nationwide oversight over power companies that are required under the country's renewable energy law to prioritize purchases of the maximum amount of green electricity available in their coverage areas.
Yeah, watch those guys.
Oh, they're dominating the market, friends.
Keep an eye on them.
Ultra-thin solar modules are going to make a 2008 debut in Germany. That's right. Germany, 10 years ago, had no renewable power. Now leads the world in solar and wind, and they're so suited to it. And it looks like China's following their lead.
Ooh.
But a new generation of ultra-thin solar modules that can be integrated in the facades of buildings at low cost is to be produced in Germany next year. The German company, Schuco, has joined with E.ON, the company's biggest energy provider, to do this.
Been reading a lot about Schuco recently.
Wow. The sustainability of a bioeconomy. Spring farmers responded to ethanol industry's demand for grain by increasing their corn acreage by 19% over last year, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. If that happens again next year, most of the agricultural subsidies will go begging because the profit and the floor value of grains made into ethanol are high enough to pay for the whole kit and caboodle.
Wow.
The renewable energy market saw another record year of venture capital and private equity investment with $18.1 billion invested in companies and projects in 2006. And our magic question of the day, what is the most harvested crop in America?
Corn?
Lawn grass. Yes, we all contribute to that, and it can be a source of energy.
Couldn't we, like, wrap all that up and send it to your local biodiesel refinery place?
Oh, I don't know. That would be really cool.
Some cellulose out of that? I think so. That'd be less transportation costs. Just don't use your lawnmower to ride over there with it, because they're very, very inefficient.
We had a request for a universal song, and so we're giving you another one. This one from the Animaniacs.
Everybody lives on a street, in a city or a village or a town for what it's worth. And they're all inside a country which is part of a continent that sits upon a planet known as Earth. And the Earth is a ball full of oceans and some mountains which is out there spinning silently in space. And living on that Earth are the plants and the animals and also the entire human race.
Inhale the helium.
It's a great big universe and we're all really puny. We're just tiny little specks about the size of Mickey Rooney. It's big and black and inky and we are small and dinky. It's a big universe and we're not. We're part of a vast interplanetary system stretching 700 billion miles long. With 9 planets and a sun, we think the Earth's the only one that has life on it, although we could be wrong. Across the interstellar voids are a billion asteroids, including meteors and Halley's Comet, too. And there's over 50 moons floating out there like balloons in a panoramic trillion-mile view. And still it's all a speck amid 100 billion stars in a galaxy we call the Milky Way. It's 60,000 trillion miles from one end to the other, and still that's just a fraction of the way. 'Cause there's 100 billion galaxies that stretch across the sky, filled with constellations, planets, moons, and stars. And still the universe extends to a place that never ends, which is maybe just inside a little jar. It's a great big universe, and we're all really puny. We're just tiny little specks about the size of Mickey Rooney. Though we don't know how we got here, we're an important part here. It's a big universe.
Oh, wait a minute. There we go. That helium is kind of rough on the old vocal cords, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Gee.
That's great. They got a lot of numbers in there.
Yeah, they do. And for the most part, they're made up, but they might be accurate.
Great big universe, but and it's ours?
And it's ours. I mean, you know, that's kind of...
Until somebody else makes a claim on it.
That's right. There was a great thing a couple of years... Oh, it was last year when they did the puppet theater.
Mm-hmm.
And they did
it again this year.
And they invited a bunch of guests in to do some other shows in some of the buildings in Chapel Hill. And I went to one. It was really cute because it was some aliens who'd landed on Earth and they wanted the deed to their planet back. You know, all the... there's several societies now that allow you to claim stars...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And this guy had done it for his girlfriend, and these two aliens show up, which, of course, were cute puppets, and they said, we want to buy back our planet. It's amazing, you know, that we think we own stuff. You know, the American Indian thought that he was owned by the land as opposed to the other way around. So, you know, that's a good start for us today, because today we're going to be looking at the oil age. Yeah. World oil production from 1859 to 2050. And we might be just about out when we hit 2050. That's the scary, scary
But we
point.
Don't have to wait until we run out to end the oil age. I was picking up arrowheads out in the woods this last week. And
hopefully they weren't attached to arrows.
No.
Okay.
That had rotted away. Very sustainable product there. Very very safe technology. Safe for the environment, that is. Mm-hmm. And but they didn't end the Stone Age because they ran out of stones. They you know, actually went into the Pottery Age, I think. And we don't have to wait until we run out of oil to end the oil age. It's the sooner the better. So even though this is, you know, panicking a lot of people, the end of oil and all that, and how we're past the peak production, really, if we stop using it, we don't run out. Might think of something better in the future for it.
On a lonely third planet from the sun, where it receives abundant sunshine, equal every day to all the fossil fuel energy contained underground in the planet, there is a small race of humans who, for the last 140 years, have been over-consuming the capital energy of the planet. This will not stand, and they are now quietly running out. Well, so much for that odious beginning there. You know, we just kind of have to take a sigh, because that's what most people are doing. They're just like, oh, well, really? But we have in front of us, courtesy of, who's this courtesy of? This big map here.
Global Public Media.
And is there a web address, I think, attached to that?
www.oilposter.org.
Yeah, and that's what we're really staring at, ladies and gentlemen, today. We're looking at the oil age oil poster. It's not a very good poster from a distance because, I mean, you can see the nice little peak of oil.
Got a lot of little tiny words on it.
Very tiny words, about 20-something pages of tiny words on it.
It's a big, big poster here.
It is a huge poster. And of course, just glancing at it, we can see that in 1859, Edward Drake drilled the first oil well. And, of course, you know, one of the things that most people do not realize is he was, you know, Colonel Drake. He really didn't belong in the military. He actually worked for the Pennsylvania Railroad and had lost his job. But he still had his conductor's pass, and so he went...
People were using oil before that, though. The Greeks had Greek fire and stuff.
But he actually... They found
oil
out,
well.
They found out that they could replace, you know, vegetable oils and, most important, whale oil.
Mm.
You know, please realize, you know, prior to this, New Bedford, that whole New England area was totally dependent on whale oil.
Whale oil.
You know, and it was one of the richest parts of the country because of that.
It was a slaughter. I was just reading the Captain Fuller's account of going from the northeast United States up there and then sailing 4,000 miles to the Kerguelen Islands, the Desolation Island in the South Pacific Ocean, the South Indian Ocean, actually. And... You know, just slaughtering the whales and the elephant seals and boiling them down on deck into oil and kegging it up and then bringing it back.
And they would be gone for long, long journeys.
Oh, 2 years.
And, of course,
yeah.
You know, what we've just found out off the North Carolina coast is one of the favorite places for the right whale.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, they got the name right whale because they were kind of... relatively slow. You could catch them in a human-powered boat. They were big, and when you killed them, they floated.
And there's about a little less than 300 left, they think.
And they routinely get hit by ships going in and out of the Chesapeake Bay.
Oh, yeah. One washed up a couple of years ago on the beach, all tangled up in old fish nets. It was very sad. Pregnant female, too.
Oh, no.
The whales were really the only ones that were... it all interested the fact that we found oil, and the forest grew back a little bit. It's sort of a strange thing. We wouldn't have the forests now that we have around us if we hadn't, you know, used a lot of oil.
That's true, because we could be cutting down those trees.
But we didn't have to use all this oil either. We could have done mass transit and
that's
electric
vehicles. And we still can.
Yeah.
In 1859, Edward Drake left Yale, where they had a geologist say that this rock oil, this petroleum, could replace whale oil, although not nearly as well. Whale oil is a very fine oil. It's used for fine machinery even today in some parts of the world.
Like Japan?
Yes. But he drilled a well, and they got down to about 65 feet and ran out of money, which is pretty chronic.
That's
as
a
well.
Water well, but yeah,
right.
not an oil
and
well.
They went down, you know, they refused to pay the guy, said, it's coming, and they went down another 3 feet, and they hit oil. And the Allegheny River, or the Allegheny River, it used to be known for having oil slicks on it from seepages, and the Indians knew about it, and so they were in that area, roughly, and they drilled a bunch of wells. And then, of course, if we go to dieoff.org and look up, you know, when will the joyride end, you find out that the Pennsylvania oil fields peaked less than 20 years after that. So in the 1870s, they were peaking for the first time. They peaked two times after that. The first time after that, because they had better steel, they could go down deeper and get more oil.
Mm.
And then the second time, they started pushing water into the wells and forcing the oil to come up to the surface. And that was done just prior to World War I.
We'll be going back and drilling for that water, too.
Yeah, well, that's one of the problems. But on our chart, I mean, you know, this thing is thinner than a piece of paper, you know, as far as the chart. And then it zooms up to today, where the chart is about 18 inches tall. So that's the difference between oil when we first got started and where we are today. And, of course, you know, our hosts here are near the half-century mark. And so we can sit there and tell you that in 1950s, early 1960s, you know, we were just about a quarter of the way up from where we are today. We have really, as a world, just zoomed up to consumption. We're up to about 82 million barrels of oil daily, of which 20 million barrels, or almost 1 million an hour, is used by the United States. Now, this is a big world and a big country, and that works only out to about 3.2 gallons per person per day in the United States.
Wow.
Boy, I went a long time there.
Yeah, I mean, it's what does it mean? I mean, we really have just, like, sucked up an amazing amount of energy and resources, and what have we come up with?
A better lifestyle?
Hmm.
One that's not negotiable?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure we're any happier than they were in the 1800s, 1890s.
I wouldn't think so. I bet they had laughter. They had
roaring
some great,
20s sounded
great
good.
Things going
like
on there. We're going to have a great future, too, as a human race. It's just that the oil age is, you know, like we said, you know, how far can we run into oil? Halfway, and then you start running out.
Well, and it's problematic because it's releasing these chemicals into the air, mercury, heavy metals, and the coal. I sort of lump coal in there, too, with
well, it is a fossil fuel.
With oil. But, you know, we've got this this climate change thing, which is big. Put on your thinking caps, and I mean, I try not to think about oil and nuclear power as much as I can, because I like to look at the positive things in the future. That's why I run my house off solar and wind power, use biodiesel and that kind of thing.
And of course, there's some sources of energy that we haven't even talked about.
Oh. We'll be right.
Oh, we're in good voice today. Yes, and most people don't realize that poo is an energy source. It can be made into methane, natural gas, and it can be done from animals. Of course, humans are part of that, and we do have
fertilizer,
certain plants
night
and stuff.
Soil.
Oh, yes. And so, you know, here are things that have served us for millennia very well,
mm-hmm.
and will continue to serve us. And what a lot of people don't realize, looking at the oil age, it's not just what we burn, folks. The major thing that we have that we do with oil, crude oil, are very high value things first. You know, we like to make pharmaceuticals, you know, pills that people pop. Mm-hmm. We like to make fertilizers.
Oh, yeah.
Pesticides, herbicides, bases for cosmetics, food additives.
How about gunpowder?
And they refine all of this stuff out of crude oil. And then when they're finished with all that, they blend it back together, crack it, and they make a hazardous waste, which they label as gasoline. And if you go on a major web page for an oil company and look up their MSDS sheet, material data safety sheet, there we go. Material safety data sheet, there we go. If you look that up, they basically have a lot of NAs on it saying, you know, this is our primary product is gasoline, and we don't have to meet all the criteria for it. So it's really interesting to me. It's like in the new building industry. You know, if you bring on a new building material, you have to test the daylights out of it. But if you're using stick build, they haven't tested that. If you are working on biodiesel, you have all of these standards to meet and safety, et cetera, and it's cleaner, it's more uniform, the chains are, and so they burn better, it's easier to tweak the engines to get better economy and better fuel consumption out of it. And yet gasoline and diesel, they've been around too long and they just haven't got around to it.
No, even if you make your own solar electric power and want to push it back in the grid, the parameters are very tight for your voltage and frequency.
They easily exceed what you get out of the standard plug.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's all over the place. The standard utility is much more variable. And a lot of people actually lose some of their output because the grid is out of compliance and the inverters, you know, won't even connect.
And sometimes you can tell that because you might have some motor that's running in your house, like a refrigerator, that mm-hmm. will actually drone differently. You know,
when it kicks on, that's a voltage drop.
Right. And you might hear it one day, and it, especially in the summertime, the hot weather we've been having, you can hear them starting to brown out a little bit to start not quite putting out the power that they're supposed to. And it's very hard on electric gadgetry.
Yeah, actually, I have a DC fridge, and when my wind turbine starts to spin up, I can hear the voltage rise in my battery bank. And then when the dump load comes on, when I'm making too much power, it goes zoo, 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 zoo. You know, it does a little thing like that. So that's a happy feeling. It's not like the sort of sinking feeling of voltage decline.
So,
but that's it. We're gonna walk out of the darkness. Ride our bike. We could ride our bike out of the darkness.
Oil came to being following two brief epochs of global warming. 90 and 150 million years ago.
Oh, dinosaurs.
A time when sun-drenched shallow seas covered much of the planet, spawning a dense soup of algae and other sea life. As dying generations settled on the seafloor, they formed into layers of carbon-rich sedimentary rock. In a few special places, continental movements contributed and compacted and captured the rock and transported it to the right depth below the earth. Over millions of years, the embedded organics were gently heated and transformed into black liquid, petroleum. Literally, rock oil was born.
Lighter than water, oil naturally rises to the surface. Prehistoric humans gathered thick crude from the surface of ponds and smeared it on their boats and dwellings to repel water. Seeps of burning crude entranced ancient man and inspired at least one religion. The Chinese and the Indians made medicines from petroleum, while oil-infused Greek fire wreaked havoc on medieval battlegrounds.
The oil age began in earnest in 1859 when Edward Drake drilled one of the world's first commercial oil wells in Titusville, Pennsylvania. Humans had finally discovered an immense store of oil, some 2 trillion barrels that lay hidden underneath impermeable cap rock deep within the earth. In the early decades of the oil age, most petroleum was refined into kerosene for illuminating the homes and businesses of a rapidly industrializing world.
Oil proved more effective than coal in running the world's navies, commercial ships, and trains. And the rise of the automobile drove a surging demand for gasoline, a new type of refined oil that surpassed kerosene in total production by 1910. Oil revolutionized war, fueling a new generation of motorized tanks and airplanes and submarines. Oil powered fast suburbanization of America. And in 1950s and in the 60s, as millions took to the roads and air travel took off.
Innumerable everyday products, from pharmaceuticals to clothing, depend on oil, and advanced chemicals and plastics as well. Diesel-powered tractors cross the farmland. Diesel-powered trucks deliver food to supermarkets. Stacked with cheap calories, the world's production has skyrocketed from 1.5 billion at the start of the oil age to that of more than 6 billion in 2005.
This is a test of the North Carolina Emergency Alert System for the Raleigh operational area. This is only a test. Broadcasters, in cooperation with local, state, and national authorities, have developed this system to provide the public with important emergency information should the need arise. This concludes the Raleigh operational area monthly test of the North Carolina Emergency Alert System.
We're finding. Today's experts say that we consume about a 4 to 6 barrels of oil for each one discovered. Such trends are now tightening the world's markets and raising prices.
The bell curve phenomenon of oil depletion was first explored by geophysicist M. King Hubbard, who lived in 1956, correctly predicted the 1971 peak in U.S. production. Today, of the 65 largest oil-producing countries, 54 are past peak and have fallen into permanent decline. Indeed, if the projections of a growing number of scientists prove correct, we are about to enter the second half of the oil age, an era characterized by ever-dwindling supplies of man's most essential commodity. Except for love. Love is a better commodity. Whether substitutes can be developed soon enough to sustain modern energy-intensive societies is a question that looms
we can only hope.
Larger every day.
So there you have it, kind of a quick story and overview of how oil production, and this is what we're leading up to.
That oil gauge. Where am I going to find the next tank?
Those 65 Mustangs. Empty. Are we there yet? That's the question on the Home Power Hour. This special edition of the Home Power Hour is underwritten by ABS8.com, Advanced Building Systems, saving you energy through good design and great materials. Visit them at exit 148, Interstate 85. And 40, right off of Chapel Hill Road. Look for the big sign. ABS8.com. Yes, indeed. A large portion, 70% of our transportation is used for cars. Yes, extinguishing species to move your fat boop around. Yes, that's a bumper sticker that has been used in several campaigns to be placed on vehicles that are wildly misappropriate for what they're doing. They might be very good vehicles, but hauling, you know, 1/10 to 1/20 of a cargo around as far as weight is not the smartest thing in the world.
No, I mean, if we had a committee to look at it in 1910, something like that, decide, well, how are we going to move people and materials around the countryside? They had electric vehicles back then. We would have used small town vehicles, electric vehicles.
And all markets were local back then, too.
And in order to get between the larger cities, we would have used mass transit. We would develop the trains to be even better and more efficient.
Enter Henry Ford and his wonderful idea of let's have an automobile, which can get you from the farm to town and back again.
If you're one of the millions who own one of them gas-drinking, piston-clanking, air-polluting, smoke-belching four-wheeled buggies from Detroit City, then pay attention. I'm about to sing your song, son. Well, honey, that's something else. Well, you can get stereo tape and a color TV, get a backseat bar and reclining seats, and just pay once a month like you do your rent. Well, I figured it up, and over a period of time, this $4,000 car of mine cost $14,000.99. Well, now, Lord, Mr. Ford, I just wish that you could see what your simple horseless carriage has become.
trick to drive, don't you? But the thing that amazes me, I guess, is the way we measure a man's success by the kind of an automobile he can afford to buy. Well, now, red light, green light, traffic cop, right turn, no turn, must turn, stop. Get out the credit card, honey, we're out of gas. Well, now, all the cars place end to end would reach to the moon and back again. There'd probably be some poor fool pull out the pass. Well, now, how I yearn for the good old days without that carbon dioxide haze hanging over the roar of the interstate. Well, if the Lord didn't made the moon and the stars would have meant for me, and you'd have cars, he'd have seen that we was all born with a parking space. Lord, Mr. Ford, I just wish that you could see what your simple horseless carriage has become. Well, it seems your contribution to man, to say the least, got a little out of hand. Well, Lord, Mr. Ford, what have you done? Come away with me, Lucille. Am I smoking, choking on the mobile?
Oh, my. That was Lord Mr. Ford and by Jerry Reed of, gosh, I guess 3 decades ago, back in the 70s when we had that first oil embargo. We've had several problems over the years with oil production. There were wars fought over it. That sounds kind of familiar and maybe a little bit more recent than I want to go to. Well, you're wanting to bring up some things about our present day situation and how we can change some of these things.
Well, it's just we have such a hard pill to take here because we've all most of us have bought cars and we've been putting all our tax dollars into highways and stuff, but really we can't let that cloud our decision making. We should look at what the best ways to move forwards in the future are. We need to look at where we want to be, envision the future world, and then move towards it. And we have to, not consider the investment that we've made already as something that's lost, or it was just the way it was. That was the oil age. That was the 20th century, and we need to move in a new direction now.
And move beyond that.
Yeah, because we could. I mean, and a lot of times people seem to think, well, this is going to be a reduction of freedom, but actually it's going to be an increase in freedom. It's not freedom to, have to be responsible for the maintenance and insurance and fueling of a personal vehicle. Freedom would be to, ride your electric scooter downtown and get on board a 300-mile-an-hour vehicle up to Washington to,
in the form of a train?
Yeah. And an electric train, even, powered by wind power and some other renewable fuel. And you could relax and sleep and read and have a good time. And it wouldn't be this, 30,000 people a year killed on the highway sort of story.
Oh, that's true. And then, of course, one of the things that we have to address
with all the animals trying to cross the highway. Have you ever tried to cross an interstate? It is hard, especially on all fours. You try to crawl across an interstate on all fours, and it's brutal. I mean, you have to wait until 4 in the morning, and even then,
Solar Jim has tried that.
Well, yeah. You got to really truck it. I was trying to, oneness with possums.
And those little possums, we always take the chalk line, and draw it around dead bodies when we find where murders happen. Just think if they did that with all the critters that had been hit crossing the road.
There'd be a lot of chalk.
There'd be a lot of chalk out there.
All the little salamanders and the toady frogs.
That's right. I mean, this is the natural
snakes.
World that we are, damaging here.
Box
and,
turtles.
Of course, in most societies, they tell us that hell is underground and that heaven is above us. And fossil fuels are things that were buried at a minimum of like 100 million years ago during a global warming epoch. Maybe we'll be able to produce, more oil over the next 200 million years if we just heat the earth hot enough. But we won't be around for that, and none of our prodigy. And I mean, it's going to be...
it's going to be the flowering of the cockroaches.
Well, cockroaches are, strangely enough, very dependent on human beings. They are a tropical insect that likes to come into humans' abodes because of the heat.
I think they'll do just fine without us, actually. But a lot of different species of cockroaches.
Then there's the other thing that
termites,
oil
termites are cockroaches.
Does for us. You know, and oil is the stuff of intrigue.
Yeah.
You know, how many James Bonds have you seen where oil was the major issue? I mean, it's in there in several of those. Where,
energy,
you know,
oil.
They're trying to destroy oil fields to run the price of other energies up, etc. It's incredible. And, you know, we train security forces to protect, to acquire. And, of course, the whole time they're doing that, they're using vast amounts of oil. The United States Navy is one of the highest users of oil, but they have been superseded by another armed service called...
The Air Force.
The Air Force, yes. Those jets use a lot of fuel. And it's American refined fuel that we use in the Middle East. And, of course, you know,
So we load up crude in the Middle East, we ship it across the ocean, we refine it in Texas, put it in airplanes, and fly back there?
That's right.
Oh.
But the other thing is the logistics of oil. You know, we think of the price of oil being what we pay at the pump. And for the military, it can be many, many fold higher than that.
Oh, and everybody else
you know,
in the
you
world.
Just start off with a little bit of, you know, fuel that may cost you $2, $3 a gallon. But when you have to truck it in an armed personnel carrier or whatever up to the front lines, it's going to be a lot dearer than that, and you could lose it. The other thing, of course, that they're trying to do is they fly it by helicopter, which, of course, is a huge use of the energy, too.
Wow.
Price goes up. And then, of course, those airplanes that are flying overhead, you know, they have to be refueled. And the price of having a tanker on station is expensive.
I bet air refueling is expensive, too.
It's extremely expensive.
Halliburton knows all this.
And so does the military. So... they are, in some cases, starting to invest in renewable energy technologies to power their computers, their communications, etc. As one general said and one admiral said, I won't believe in renewable energy until it can push an aircraft carrier through the water. We haven't gotten to that yet, but all the communications, all of the computers, all the satellites, they're powered by solar energy. Sorry about that. A little bit of a rant.
Well, and... what I found out as I got into small wind is the observation posts that the military has 100 miles off our coast that watch for pirate vessels and enemy ships and that sort of stuff. They're wind powered. They have these observation decks that are 100 feet off the ocean, and they used to power them with diesel generators, but they kept having to get the diesel repairman through security to get out there and tune it up. Even though the marine diesels were very reliable, the wind turbines were even more reliable. And at that height over the ocean, there was almost always wind power. So this country is actually guarded and defended by wind power. Small wind, even. Those are Bergy 10Ks out there on those platforms. Very nice machine. Lower corner. Push it. Well...
well, we're not going to get that one.
Technology is wrestling.
That's right.
Sustainable jack to the floor.
That's right. And it's winning right now, so we'll just see what we can do. You're listening to
the Home Power Hour.
Yes, we'll use the pipeline music because 13% of our oil imports come through the Louisiana Offshore Pipeline through Port Fouchon.
That's
and over a million and a half barrels of oil come through Port Fouchon, which is, of course, just 23 miles south of New Orleans.
That's why I had such a panic attack after...
every hurricane season.
Yeah.
Every time it gets into the Gulf, they're really panicking. Ivan did a number on Port Fouchon right before, the year before Katrina.
Mm.
So in 2004, it was Ivan. 2005, fortunately, Katrina went to the east of everything.
We still had restrictions and rationing of gasoline here in North Carolina after Katrina.
That's true. And the prices went way up. But... Our oil peaked in the United States in 1970, and over 65% of all U.S. oil has been used. There's only 35% left. Pennsylvania has peaked. In 1891, Pennsylvania peaked. Remember, that's where the Rockefeller fortune was made.
And this is not a...
Texas has peaked in 72. And, of course, we can go through a whole bunch of other, you know, states. 31 states produce oil in the United States, and all are past their peaks. Oklahoma, 1927. Colorado, 1956. Wyoming, 1970. Alaska, 1988. Less than 10 years after the oil line had been put through, Alaska production peaked. 1988.
And this other stuff that they're after is a very thick and gooey crude. And... the pipeline is getting pretty old.
That's right. It's past its design life now.
And if there's any problems up there and they actually have to stop pumping, it'll turn into the world's longest chapstick.
That's right. It'll freeze. It's a problem. There are 370 giant oil fields nicknamed elephants. The last one was discovered just in the last couple of years deep in the Gulf of Mexico.
Wait, they've named 300 different ones elephant?
Yes.
That's not a very creative
Well, naming. They call them elephants because they're so big. Of course, they have their own names, you know.
Oh, okay.
Gawar and Bergan. Those are just in Saudi Arabia, mm-hmm. you know. If you took all the oil in the world and put it into a container, the container would be...
All the oil now or all
2.1
the oil?
2.1 trillion barrels of oil, which is what the latest estimate is of what we have. Mm-hmm. And you put it into a container.
Yeah.
We did the math. 67 cubic miles of oil. Now, that's 4 miles wide, 4 miles deep, and a little over 4.5 miles tall. That's it.
So about a four-mile cube.
So some student, you know, measured out Maggie Valley and said all the world's oil could be held in this valley. I mean, that's just absolutely amazing to me.
Boy, it'd be nasty to clean that up, though.
And you could walk around it in a day.
Huh.
And you could fly over it in an airplane. Mm-hmm. And now think of that as half full. And we are driving bigger and bigger pipelines into it to drain it off. So it took us, my friends, you know, from 1859 till today, roughly, in this time frame, to use up half of the world's oil. So we're halfway into it, and we're running out. And that's what our show is about today. And one of the big concerns we have is we're running out a lot faster than we ran into it. Because we just have a lot more demand. We're still building up demand for oil. In fact, two of our pieces of information we have before us does not take into account that China has eclipsed Japan as the world's second largest user of oil. And so, you know, we could very well come into conflict with the economic power of China over the world's oil. In fact, we already have. You know, they tried to buy Chevron, which was for sale, and we nixed it in our Senate. Saying we can't sell that asset to the Chinese. They might actually use it.
Well, and everybody's looking in Darfur now and trying to figure out how much oil is underground there.
Yeah, from all the blood that's flown into the ground.
But we don't have to create this crisis. This is a human-created crisis. This is not a natural phenomenon. There is lots of energy around.
Yeah, and there's another. I got a beautiful little thing on the computer, and you can get it too. It's When Will the Joyride End? Just Google that, and you can pull it up off of www.dieoff.org, which is another place with scads of information about peak oil.
If you're on a bike, the joyride doesn't end.
That's right. But the baby boomers, of which I'm a proud member, and I think that Solar Jim is too.
Well, maybe the last few years.
Yeah, well, all right. And people born between 1950 and who will kick the bucket around 2025 will be around for using half of the world's oil. Our kids who were born in the 1980s, they'll also be around for half of the world's oil, but they'll just be sliding sideways a little bit and be a lot closer to the end of it. But as the Saudis say in their great statement, you know, my father rode a camel. I drive a car, my son flies an airplane, and my grandson will drive a camel.
You ride a camel.
That's true. And of course, who's got oil and who uses oil? Hey, they're not lined up like they used to be. Let's just talk about some of our friends that produce oil for us. Let's see. United States, China, Japan, Russia, Germany, South Korea, Italy, France, and England. they all use oil. And in fact, England has now passed the peak with their North Sea oil, and they're going to have to start importing oil after 20 years of having a surplus. But here's who's got oil. Saudi Arabia has 26% of the world's oil.
Wow.
Iraq has 10% of the world's oil.
Mm-hmm.
Kuwait has 10% of the world's oil. Abu Dhabi, 9% of the world's oil. Iran, 9% of the world's oil. Venezuela, 6% of the world's oil. Soviet Union, 5%. Mexico, 5%. United States, 3%. Now, of those, Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Kuwait, Abu Dhabi, Iran, they're all in the Middle East, and they're all our friends.
Not. Right.
And then, of course, Venezuela, we've managed to drive them from the friendship column, too, over trying to overthrow them several times and causing all types of consternation. We, you know, oil is not friendly. It's not a friendly thing. You know, most of those countries I listed out are not democracies.
Right.
You know, they have a totally different civilization and culture, and it's because of oil being concentrates power into the hands of the few.
It's some places, and it ain't other places.
And it causes problems for the countries that have it as well as the countries that don't.
The sun and the wind fall on everybody democratically.
Ooh. How nice.
It's hard to corral that stuff up.
It is. It is.
Because your neighbor has it, too.
Remember, we've paved paradise and put in a parking lot. More than 60% of our cities and our urban areas are devoted to the care and feeding of the automobile, not people. I mean, just look at the parking spaces and the roads,
that would make it the dominant species on the planet.
That's right. And they're reproducing like rabbits, pardon the pun, but they are reproducing at a rate almost three times the human population. They're reproducing that much faster, primarily in China and the developing world, you know. When Jerry Reed sang that song, he said, you know, the average family had 1.5 cars, you know, and I bet that half a car is a trick to drive. That's not true. We actually have more vehicles in the United States now than drivers.
Wow.
And we'll soon probably have more vehicles than people.
Parked vehicles, too.
If you're lucky.
Maybe, yeah. You know, recycling those vehicles, that's a big career choice there.
But anyhow, that's some of the situations that we find ourselves in.
Well, we've got the creativity, and we've got examples all around the world that show us the way out of this, too. Energy efficiency, renewables, bicycle, local production of food and fuels. That's the way out of here. There's no silver bullet. It's just a bunch of handmade bamboo sticks that we have to beat our own donkey with.
Wake up, America! It's time to get on the renewable bandwagon. Your grandparents did it. Your great-grandparents did it. And your grandchildren will thank you for doing it. That's right, America! Get unaddicted to oil. Join the renewable revolution using solar,
wind,
hydro,
microhydro,
biofuels,
energy efficiency.
Yes, don't forget that energy efficiency in your buildings, in your life, in your consumption. Eat local foods grown locally. Help out your farmer friends. If you do this, America will become full of liberty and freedom for everyone. We have nothing to fear but fear itself.
Renewable energy is homeland security.
Daddy, how long have we had this solar thermal thing here?
Well, son, we've had it since you were just expecting. When you were in your mama, we decided that you were going to be washed in renewably heated water.
Thanks, Daddy.
Yeah, I hate those nuclear power heated showers.
Forget nuclear power! Divorce yourself from the oil age! Join the oil old solar age. The one that's delivered every day. And vast, vast quantities.
Gosh, Daddy. I just love our solar-powered bicycle.
I do too, son. Isn't it fun just being powered along by photons?
Daddy, what's a photon?
Photon releases those excitons. And the excitons are what move the electrons and that charge our batteries. So remember to check the water in your batteries in your renewable energy system.
And this ends the Oil Age special of the
Whole Power Hour.
It's an oxymoron, we know that.
Well, they used a lot of oxes for powering farm work before the advent of the tractor.
But that's right.
We don't have to be morons.
Hey, Ernie Hood is here, and he's going to be giving us the Radio in Vivo show coming up on the top.